The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello and good morning. This is Joseph Jackson with Cowtown Conversations. I am your host, and this morning we're going to be talking to Missouri State Representative Brandon Ellington from the 22nd District. And we're going to be talking about the constitutional amendments and the statutory measures on November 6th general election ballot. Good morning, Representative Ellington. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. Welcome back.
Now, how you doing? It's always good to be here.
I hope this time doesn't go like the last time where we had the good, the bad, and the ugly that started out. It was just by the time you got done, it was just all ugly.
Well, that's the horrible thing in Missouri. It's hard to get to the good.
And so, unfortunately, that is so true. So you're on your third term as a state representative. Can you tell us about some of the accomplishments that you are proud of accomplishing in 6 years representing the 22nd District?
Oh, I actually can. I have a list somewhere in my phone. I can get to it and I can read through several bills. But one of the ones that I want to highlight out the gate is one I've been working on for the last maybe three or four sessions. Was a bill that removes the statute of limitation for victims of child abuse and sexual molestation. I'm proud to say that I actually got that bill passed this year. And I also want to give a shout out and a thank you to Chairman Representative Kevin Corlew. Even though he's a Republican, he sits on the other side of the aisle. He helped me get this bill out. We put it in two omnibus bills that came out of his committee. One of them ultimately got signed, passed out of the Senate and got signed this year. And I also want to give a shout out to Alvin Sykes, because Alvin Sykes is the gentleman that actually gave me the idea for the bill, asked me to file it a few years ago, and I've been working on it and pushing it out. So I'm actually glad to get that one done. That was a huge one. Another one that I can think of out the gate was the cigarette bill that we did, where we removed the packaging from in front for children. I was a co-sponsor on that bill. Representative Sheila Salon was a sponsor. But if you actually want me to get into that type of legislation, give me half a second and I'll pull up a folder. Because I got like three spreadsheets, man. I'm actually proud of the bills I've been able to work with people across the aisle getting done.
Well, let's talk about this. I know last week you had an event here, the job fair for felons. Can you talk about that? I know it was a great success.
Yeah, this is our third one this year. I've been organizing with York Wilson. So he's came in, he actually contacts the companies, et cetera. The job fairs that we've been doing targets folks that have felonies, because when we talk about reassimilating or gaining access to viable employment and reducing the crime, this is how you do it. You don't reduce crime by putting 1,000 police officers on the block. You don't reduce crime by blaming the state for not fixing gun laws or taking guns away from people. You reduce crime by creating the necessities that people need, such as employment, that allows them to take ownership over their own community. So again, we've been doing job fairs. We looked forward to doing another one around the first quarter of next year. The job fairs target felons, but they're open to everybody, and we've been having a great success ratio. And again, I want to thank York Wilson, because he's been helping me organize it.
And these are not jobs that just pay minimum wage. These are all jobs that pay well over minimum wage.
Yeah, the lowest job that I allow to come in there is around $10 an hour, and that's low to me. But I want jobs that are actually viable for folks. In particular, when you talk about the marginalized community, I believe that a job is the first vanguard into actually owning a business, which gives us American ownership, something that we need to aspire and actually understand when it comes to owning everything, from our institutions to our education to our economic density and destiny. So again, the job fair is target felons, but it's a long-term thing that we have going. $10 is the minimum job that we look for, but we're not just trying to put people in jobs. We're trying to get them that security. And then we have, a long-term plan in which we're going to be working on for small business growth.
Before we jump into our constitutional amendments and our statutory amendments, I have to ask this question. Missouri Attorney General Josh Hawley, a candidate for the United States Senate, signed on to the Texas lawsuit filed February 26, 2018, that will allow insurance companies not to cover those with pre-existing conditions or charge higher premiums. This would impact between 1.1 and 2.5 million Missourians. Is this a bill that, is this something that should have went through the state legislature, or should the attorney general have this type of power?
This is something that this is something that's all political. So we have an attorney general that's running for the federal government, running against Senator Claire McCaskill, running to be a senator, and now we're signing on to lawsuits to give him national attention. I believe this is something the attorney general should have stayed out of. And I don't know if you want me to mention this now or, and it's the same with the voter ID filing, because I don't know if you know or if we was going to talk about it, but he actually filed that too to overturn the ruling that just came down that said that the voter ID that we passed was impinging upon people's rights to vote. So we have attorney general that's running rogue right now, and I believe he's only doing it for political appeal. And I say this going from my observation and what I've seen from this attorney general. He's been elected, and the minute he got elected, he started running for a higher office, which means I had no commitment to the office of attorney general in the state of Missouri. I've also seen him negate his duty when it comes to certain filings that by being the attorney general, you have the authority to do, but you negated to lower prosecutors because, again, it's political, because now we're talking about partisan prosecution as opposed to just prosecution on the law. So I believe that this new way that we've seen him sign on to was solely for political purposes. And we've also seen him, and I'm not trying to get partisan just by bashing Republicans, but we've also seen him on the same coattail of President Trump, and all of this political maneuvering that we're seeing, I believe, is a fallout of wanting to get elected underneath the Trump regime, or at least by the Trump voters.
And as we look back at his commercials, and you see that one with the ladders where he's talking about people using one office to get to another office. It seems as soon as he got into this office, he was now using this office to get to another office. You know, I would love to, I reached out to both campaigns, but I know they're going to be in St. Louis next week having a conversation, and I would definitely be able to love to talk to him about these two things to see what we can do, because it seems like the issues of Missourians are not being fairly represented in this case, and it's going to actually hurt a lot of Missourians.
And just because I am who I am and I have to do it, I can't let Claire off either, because since we're talking about commercials and we're talking about imagery, one of the things that's been disheartening to me is the type of commercials that's been running in the so-called minority communities, whether that's radio commercials from both parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, that highlight so-called African-American conversations, which has nothing to do with the way black folks talk or our issues. In particularly, some of the messaging that I've seen from my senator that highlights, again, the appealing to Trump voters. Well, I got the security behind me, I have this fence here, and, you know, I support tough border security. Dude, this is Missouri. We have no borders around us. That is not a Missouri issue, and this is not something that we should be talking about. We should be talking about issues that are germane and pertinent to the people that stay in Missouri. And again, I don't know if people looked at a map, but if you look at a map, we have no borders around us. Canada's not over us. I mean, around us, neither is Mexico, right? Or Florida.
I think that we should be talking more about, if we're going to have that conversation, she should be maybe talking about how the tariffs are going to impact the Missouri soybean farmers.
Thank you.
The wheat farmers and the corn farmers that are projected to lose money because the Chinese are now not going to buy as much wheat and Missouri products.
No, thank you.
That are going to hurt the rural backbone of our country and the farmers who work hard to eke out a living. But now they're going to start to lose some of that.
Now, thank you.
But let's talk about Constitutional Amendment number 1. Shall the Missouri Constitution be amended to change the process and criteria for redrawing state legislative districts during reappropriation, change limits on campaign contributions that candidates for state legislature can accept from individuals or entities, establish a limit on gifts that state lobbyists, state legislators, and their employees can accept from paid lobbyists, prohibit state legislators and their employers from serving as paid lobbyists for a period of time, prohibit political fundraising by candidates for members or for members of the state legislature on state property, and require the legislative records and proceedings to be open to the public. What is truly behind? We've said a whole lot, but what's truly behind all of that?
The thing that you said, I wasn't counting the numbers when you was going down, so I just jumped right to it. The redistricting, right? So when we talk about everything else, we're talking about fictitious argument. Campaign limitations. We already got that. Right? Same when you talk. Hold on. Let me pull it. Read that again real quick, sir.
Change limits on campaign contributions from candidates for state legislator can accept from individuals. Establish a ban on gifts.
Okay. Now I have it right here. Okay. And sorry about that. So when you talk about change campaign contributions that candidates for state legislator can accept from individual entities. For those that don't know, that's $2,600. Right, and it's wraparounds around that. And I can get into details when I talk about wraparounds around that if we need to. Establish a limit on gifts that state legislators and their employees can accept. When you talk about gifts, you're talking about dinners, maybe when a rep or a senator goes out with a lobbyist. Sometimes you're talking about game tickets, et cetera, and things of that nature. This is not where the corruption comes in. It sounds good. It sounds like, well, this is where the corruption comes in. But if you look at campaign donations, this is more dangerous than somebody going to a dinner talking to a lobbyist or going to a Chiefs game, watching the game, talking to the owner about tax credits or whatever it is. It's more dangerous getting a couple $100,000 in various PAC donations limited out at $2,600. That's more dangerous than somebody going to a game or going to a dinner. But we don't talk about that because that's true ethics reform, right? Prohibit personal fundraising for candidates or members of the state legislator on state property. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen because it's already illegal, right? I can't be in the Capitol and hold a fundraiser in office 101C. I can't go to the governor's governor's mansion. There ain't no telling what happens over there. But I couldn't do it in the Capitol. I couldn't be in the Capitol. I couldn't be on state property. I can't even do it on city property, right? I couldn't be a city councilman at City Hall throwing a fundraiser or going to Brush Creek and not paying for it as a private rental and throwing a fundraiser. This is already illegal. Require legislative records and proceedings to be open to the public. They already are. Right. All governmental records is open. This is why we have certain acts in which you can sunshine public records. This is why you can't have a quorum of public officials in the room, because then it becomes an open public meeting. Right. So the state, 34 of us, 44 of us, something like that in the room, and then that actually would constitute something like that. So the real thing, and the only thing that isn't law and isn't being addressed right now, is the redistricting process. And this is the most dangerous thing, because now you're talking about long-term political extension and political control. Because the average citizen, we think about survival. Political operatives, they think about long-term social and economic trends and trends. Where's the money going to be? Where's the population going to be? How can we divide this and guarantee that we capitalize? So what Clean Missouri Amendment would do, it would require equal political representation in a district. So what does that mean? Does that mean that since a majority of black folks vote Democratic, are you going to draw Democratic districts way out into a different area to encompass more Republican voters because you have a concentrated effort in the city? Well, this reduces and dilutes the type of representation that you get, because now I'm bringing in cross communities, and this is excuse and not excuse, because now we're talking about voter participation. Because the counter argument is, well, we have 33,000 people drawn into the district, 15,000 of them are Democrats, 15,000 of them are Republicans. Well, sure enough, you have to be able to split a vote and come up with a viable candidate. But when you look at voting trends, you don't see that. You don't see 15,000 so-called minorities comparable to 15,000 non-minorities. Same when you look at women, et cetera. And I shut up because I know you.
No, we're going to take a short break. We have our fall pledge drive, so we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back after this short break. And we're back. You're listening to Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM, KKFI. And our champion for this hour is Kathy Peters. So Kathy Peters has agreed to match $100 a donation. So if we get $100, Kathy Peters will double that. And I've made it easy, as I do during the pledge drives. I've paid the first $25. So now what we need is people to go online or to call in at 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901. So we need $75 to meet this pledge match. So the next 7 minutes, we're going to be done with that pledge match. But we definitely need the online support at kkfi.org. So, Ebony, as a working here at the volunteer all volunteer studio, how important are these pledge matches to KKFI?
Well, it's like you said, the pledge matches double our impact. So it's not only, it's a community member that is saying, hey, I'll offer up additional money for other community members to come and join in the pot, you know, so let's bring it together and make it more of an impact. Some of the conversations that we're having here with Representative Brandon Ellington, you can get that here on community radio. You know, we're having a conversation that you can have at your dinner table on your porch with your family members, and actually bring out some facts and some points to discuss, whether you agree or disagree, or, you know, or what have you. But somebody willing to put up some money in order for us to keep these programs running, and what it costs for us to keep our station going, is a kind of a no-brainer to donate now during this time, as we have about 5 more minutes to go in this champions match. So you can dial 888-931-0901 or go to kkfi.org/donate.
And, you know, the purpose of community radio station is to inform and educate, and that's what we're doing this morning. And we're meeting the mission that the public has put to us. So these donations are critical because, as I said last hour, you may hear a snippet of this on something else, but here you're going to hear the entire conversation. But only that, you can call in and be a part of that conversation and ask questions. So this is democracy at its best.
Yeah.
But also, our sustaining donors are the ones that we actually also need to help us, because what they do is not just a one-time gift. Mm-hmm. It's a year-round gift. And, you know, for $7.50 or more, you can get that nice KKFI coffee mug or that hat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to do $20 or more, you can get the nice black KKFI hoodie, which shows your support.
Yeah.
But also, you can get the one-hour guest DJ, which would be a great gift for a young person or someone else in their family, where they can come on and play 1 hour worth of their own music to let people know what type of music they listen to. And it's kind of contagious, because once you start to donate and start to volunteer here at KKFI, you want to do more. You want to see what you can do. So give us a call on our pledge line. That's 1-888-931-0901, or donate securely online at kkfi.org. We only need $75 more to meet this champions match from Kathy Peters. And we don't want to leave money on the table, because by meeting that match, it allows your dollars to go twice as far than they regularly would.
Absolutely. And we have about 2 minutes left in this Challenge Kansas City. So if you're up with us, if you're listening online or in your car or at work, gather your friends, your coworkers, your neighbors, your family members, and whoever, and let them know you want to continue this radio station. And why would they give to a radio station? We are a 501c3. We're not the same as a for-profit, or as if you were listening earlier, Mike Murphy mentioned, with being a public radio station, we're not backed by a university, or we're independent. So we're not a part of another station that helps offset our cost or pay any other of our other bills. We are truly a community garden in the form of radio. So for all of you who choose to give us financial gifts that our tax write-offs as well, but that helps nourish our garden so we can have shows like Cowtown Conversations, and then shows like Roots Wise Reggae, and then shows like World Sound Music, and then shows like Heartland Labor Form, and then syndicated shows like the show that aired before this, Democracy Now! So you allow us to have that abundance here when you dial 888-931-0901, 888-931-0901, or go to kkfi.org/donate.
We have about 90 seconds left, so we really only need about $75 to meet the match, and we don't want to leave that money on the table. And then we're going to get back into talking about our constitutional amendments, but we need your listener support. We need your help. So give us a call on our studio line, 1-888-931-0901, or you can donate online securely at kkfi.org. You know, we're thankful for all the donations, whether it's any from a dime to a dollar, from a dollar to $100. Every penny counts. Every donation counts. And you're going to hear things on your listener-supported radio that you're not going to hear anywhere else. And we've been listener supported for an entire 30 years that KKFI has been in operation. All of us DJs, all of us show hosts, we're all volunteers. We're non-paid. Yeah. We do this for the love and to put out good quality information for you, our metropolitan community area, and our listeners. So we've got about 50 seconds left, so give us a call on the studio line, 1-888-931-0901, or donate online securely at kkfi.org.
And we do have a few sustaining donors that we'd like to thank for your continued support. Amanda James, John Killen, Joan Long, Jennifer Thurn, and Megan Florence. Those are just a few of our sustaining donors who keep us nourished in here all throughout the year.
As we said, you're going to hear things here that you won't hear anywhere else. Heartland Labor Forum, Cowtown Conversations, our Public Affairs, Urban Connections, Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City. These are all radio station shows for the listeners to inform and educate them about many things that are going on. I know we're a lot of the silly season, we're all sick of it, but we're breaking it down for you so that when you go in to vote, you know exactly what you're voting for and what the impact is going to be about that. So you can still give us a call on our studio line at 1-888-931-0901 or donate securely at kkfi.org. And we're going to get back now to our conversation with Representative Ellington. So Representative Ellington, the Constitutional Amendment number 2, I have to ask, this has been an initiative petition. Does this legalize marijuana in the state of Missouri?
Okay. It would legalize medical, and I'm trying to pull it up right now because I have all of them in front of me. I just couldn't.
It says, shall the Missouri Constitution be amended to allow the use of marijuana for medical purposes and to create regulations and license certification procedures for marijuana and marijuana facilities, impose a 4% tax on retail sale of marijuana, and use of the funds for health care services for military veterans by the Missouri Veterans Commission, and to administer the program to license and certify and regulate marijuana and marijuana facilities. It's estimated to generate about $18 million in taxes and fees for the state and veterans programs and $6 million for local governments. Annual state operating costs are to be about $7 million.
Yeah, this is actually the Amendment 2. This is actually one I'm the most comfortable list out of all of them. So it is a constitutional amendment, so it would give to answer your question, simple and plain, it would make medical marijuana constitutionally protected here in the state of Missouri. So, yes, medical marijuana would be legal, but then it comes down to the regulations and who drafts what. So the members of the General Assembly would definitely have legislative input over regulations that weren't contained in the constitutional amendment. So just to give you an example, in the provision, they have qualifying medical conditions for which marijuana can be prescribed as cancer, epilepsy, glaucoma, intractable migraines, chronic conditions that cause severe persistent pain, debilitating disorders, HIV and AIDS. Any terminal illness using marijuana as a substantial and addictive pain medications or anything like that. So we wouldn't be able to limit what is constitutionally protected. So when it says intractable migraines, if somebody went in there and they say, you know, I got headaches, and you and the doctor couldn't find a brain aneurysm or anything going on, or cancer cell, or growth or anything like that, it doesn't matter. It qualifies because what it says is intractable migraines. So that means you can't track them. You can't see where they're coming from. So Amendment 2 is actually one that I'm more comfortable with. I'm not comfortable with Brad Bradshaw's ones. I'm not comfortable with the other ones for the way that they're actually written. When you ask about the funding, that becomes questionable because the Veterans Commission should secure the funding by the way it's written, but that doesn't stop the General Assembly for doing other things to that commission outside of the marijuana tax.
Okay, so now we have Constitutional Amendment number 3. And it says, shall the Missouri Constitution be amended to allow the use of marijuana for medical purposes and create regulations and licensing procedures for marijuana and marijuana facilities, impose a 15% tax on the retail sale of marijuana and a tax on the wholesale of marijuana flowers and leaves per dry weight ounce to be licensed facilities, and use the funds to establish a statewide research initiative to conduct research for the purpose of developing cures and treatments for cancer and other incurable diseases and medical conditions. The proposal expected to generate annual taxes and fee in the amount of $66 million, and the state government entities estimate implementation cost of anywhere between $186,000 and $3.5 million, with increased annual operating costs. So, okay, first question, where's the money going, and what are we going to grow with it?
Hey, man, do you remember a cartoon in the 90s called Pinky and the Brain?
Yes.
All right, so that's what he did right here. He just brained everybody and tricked us to being Pinky. So when he was out, and they had people, and this is one of the things I was extremely irritated about, people in the community. So when they was out and they was getting these petitions signed, I'm seeing people sign up to these petitions talking about they're going to legalize medical marijuana. Dude, you haven't read it. It's called the Brad Bradshaw Amendment. Right. So what he's doing, he's constitutionally codifying himself as a drug seizor if this law passes. Right. So the reason I use the analogy of the brain is, from his standpoint, is brilliant. I control your tax dollars, and I'm not an elected official. I'm not a government entity. You give me your money and I give you what I feel like I'm going to give you. Right. So from his standpoint, ingenious. From everybody else's standpoint, you, in my opinion, you would be ridiculous to vote on this bill, right? You would be ridiculous to codify in the Constitution somebody that's not elected, a non-governmental entity, to oversee your tax dollars. If you fiscally conservative, how can you vote for this and you have issues with the government that is transparent as far as being able to sunshine and request records? This is a non-governmental entity here. I'm 100% personally, I'm 100% against this initiative. From his standpoint, I think it was brilliant to try to get people to pass a law that's going to give him ultimate control over the regulations, the licenses, and the dollars.
So in other words, he gets control. He can make himself the CEO, executive director, pay himself $1 million a year.
He is.
And nobody else can say anything about
it. He is. If you look at the language, it's called the Brad Bradshaw Amendment. It ain't called the medical, oh, sorry, forgot I'm on the, it's not called the medical marijuana amendment. It's the Brad Bradshaw, man. My name is going to be in history and I control everything that comes to this substance. And when I say everything, I'm talking about the, like we just read Amendment 2 and it had the qualifying conditions that people are going to vote on. What's his qualifying conditions?
So
what research institution is he using? Because he is a doctor and a lawyer. Is he using his own research institution? Yeah. Like, I mean, this is, people, wake up, man. Y'all talk about Trump. Y'all talk about Kavanaugh. Dude, y'all getting played right here in your own state.
So he becomes essentially the marijuana czar for the state of Missouri, and he controls everything, but he's not telling people where anything is actually going.
Man, he become Escobar without the fear of retaliation of going to jail. He's constitutionally protected. Cut it out.
Okay. you've got something.
We have some news. Thank you, thank you, thank you to our community. We did make our match. Woohoo!
Thank you so much, listeners.
So, Kathy Peters, you're going to have to cough up that $100. We made the match, and thank you to an anonymous U.S. Army veteran who also called in to support and to help us make that match. We appreciate it.
We thank you so much for that. So we have to go to Constitution Amendment number 4. Okay, this one's interesting. Do you want to amend the Missouri Constitution to remove language limiting bingo game advertisement that the court ruled unenforceable and allow a member of the licensed organization conducting bingo games to participate in the management of bingo games after being a member of the organization for 6 months instead of the current 2 years? The state and local government entities estimate no cost or savings from this proposal. Okay, we have many other things that we could be doing in the state of Missouri other than trying to regulate bingo games. Why are we trying to regulate bingo games? And I have to, this one is proposed by the 99th General Assembly.
Yeah.
House Bill number 59. So this was one that was put on there by the state. So I got to ask the question, why does the state care about regulating the bingo game?
Well, two things. One, voting is important because, like you said, this is a bill that actually came through the General Assembly. This is a bill that I believe we spent maybe 2 or 3 days on, like literally just talking about the bill. Some people wasted time on the bill, et cetera. I actually voted, full disclosure, I actually voted yes on this bill because of the provision that allows a member to actually participate. And this is one of the reasons, because in the state, it's illegal for us to illegal for us when it comes to gifts and things of that nature, gifts and gambling, which is casinos, bingo, in different caveats of institutional businesses that we have that has to cross regulations. So basically we had to do this because they couldn't do it themselves. And again, it has to be a constitutional amendment because we're talking about gifts and gambling, which falls up underneath a different caveat of the law. And it's a reason why the casinos have to be in by the river and certain things. This is just a regulation that we needed to untangle. So this was actually one I supported. It was a waste of time on the floor. Because, again, we did it for like 2 or 3 days, but it's something that we had to do. It has to go back to the people.
Okay, so now we're going to come to a very important one. Now we're going from the constitutional measures, which means those are things that will amend the Missouri Constitution. These are statutory measures.
Yes.
Proposition B, proposed initiative petition. This means it was a petition proposed by the people. Do you want to amend Missouri law to increase the state minimum wage to $8.60 per hour with 85 cents per hour increase each year until 2023 when the state minimum wage should be $12 per hour? It would exempt government employers from the above increase and increase the penalty for paying employees less than the minimum wage. State and local governments estimate no direct costs or savings from the proposal, but operating costs could increase by an unknown annual amount that could be significant. State and local government tax revenue could change by an unknown amount, ranging from $2.9 million decrease to $214 million increase, depending upon business decisions. Kansas City and St. Louis have won over the battle of trying to raise the minimum wage, but we can't because it's controlled by the state. And right now, the minimum wage has not been raised in over 5 years. Mm. And people can't make it on $7.85 mm-hmm. an hour.
Now, this is one I'm actually extremely sensitive to since I've been in the body. Since probably about 2011, 2012, I've been filing minimum wage increase bills. The only thing that I want to caution people, and personally, I think the minimum wage needs to be increased. I think we need to put more pressure on private businesses to pay a dollar amount that we find socially acceptable, because, again, we're talking about social constructs in agreements, not necessarily legally codified agreements from public entities and how much they pay. And increasing the minimum wage changes that conversation. Increasing the minimum wage makes it legal where a business has to pay a certain dollar amount in the state of Missouri. Now, again, I'm in favor of increasing the minimum wage. The only thing I would caution people about is the wraparound services, right? Because this is something that hasn't been proposed at the state, meaning we haven't adjusted the different social programs and dollar amounts is attached to those social programs. So arbitrarily raising the minimum wage could knock people out of various social services that they get. Well, some will say, well, that's a good thing, but it depends on one's personal budget. Mm-hmm. If I make a dollar more, does that dollar really benefit me more than the services that I get right now, as opposed to creating a stair-stepping system in which we increase the minimum wage and reduce the amount of support and also increase the wage amount that somebody can be viable when it comes to social services. So that's my only concern, is the fallout effect of federal programs and state programs in which you have a certain dollar amount that you can't cross, and then you're no longer eligible for those services.
And what people also need to realize is that if it costs more for the McDonald's to pay the individual to cook my hamburger, the cost of my hamburger is not going to go up from a dollar or 85 cents to now maybe a dollar and a half. So we have to look at, and I'm not against it, but what I'm saying is that we have to look at what are going to be the other fallouts. Also, I want to say this. While we all may love Amazon, I want to say a big shout out to Jeff Bezos, who's the billionaire owner of Amazon. He looked at it and said $12 is not enough, and he raised all of the Amazon employees' wages to $15 an hour. You know, we've had the fight for $15, so now we've had an employer to reach out and start to give $15. But what that's going to do now is that if employers want to keep their highly trained workforce, they're not going to have to up their game, because they're going to sit and tell you, you're paying me $12. I can go to Jeff Bezos, and I can make $15 over 8-hour shift. That means I'm going to make $25 a day. That's almost $500 a month more than I'm going to make it anybody else.
And if we could, just elaborate on this conversation right now. In the trade war, who benefits, right? Does the trader benefit or does the buyer benefit? The buyer benefits because if you and Joe or bidding for me to buy this earphone set. Well, I have all the power because I don't have to buy it from neither one of y'all. So y'all have to appeal to me to sell it to me to a price that I want it. It's the same when you talk about workers and social contracts of what we want in this area. If we say that it's unacceptable for a billion-dollar corporation to pay employees substandard wages and increase my tax burden because now I have to provide – I'm sorry, I'm talking with my hands. Now I have to provide more dollars when it comes to social services such as medical programs, medical access, etc. Well, this is unsocially acceptable. We're no longer going to shop at this facility. We're going to shut this down until you increase the payment. People have more power in this democracy and this government than what we actually pay attention to. We more often than not look at the government as a big umbrella and it should protect everybody, but this creates more problems than anything. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm in favor of raising the minimum wage. I just think that we need to be cautious about all of it, because like I said, starting in 2011, I started filing bills, and I was just underneath the impression that if I give you more money, you live better. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been to several different cities and several different conferences and all type of things where you have more information. Mm-hmm. And I'm still in favor of raising the minimum wage. I just look at everything now. I look at not only the mom and pop costs, but what is this going to actually do to people? Who's going to get knocked out of vital services that mm-hmm. they need just because they make a couple extra dollars? I'm more in favor of a national and a state conversation and active, aggressive legislation to create stair steps.
Mm-hmm. But also we have to look at it this way. It can be a brilliant business move by Amazon to ensure that to get more people to come work with me, because now I can say I'm paying my workers above minimum wage, almost double minimum wage, more than Walmart, more than Target, more than everybody else. And it also keeps work people from looking at him as, folks, he makes $237 million a day. He's worth almost $150 billion. So we've all got Prime TV, Prime this, Prime that. And what's a better way to keep the money rolling in than now, instead of making $237 million a day, I only make, we'll say, $230 million a day. I'm still going to continue to keep rolling. And Amazon is not even near the juggernaut that it is probably going to be in 10 years.
And just because I like throwing kerosene on gasoline and fire, I remember the city council and the mayor was talking about increasing the minimum wage about a year ago. They never came to the state to increase the minimum wage. But the one thing that I was going to say, and this directly goes off what you were saying, Joe, when you talk about Amazon, the workforce enthusiasm, imagine if our city that said that they wanted to increase minimum wage but didn't actually increase their employee salary. Imagine the type of services that we can have if we stopped buying contractors that mm-hmm. come in to do the street, and we actually use our public safety network by increasing their wages. I just want to throw that out there, because in politics, you have a lot of people that say one thing and they really don't want to do it. This amendment is something different because it's been drafted by the people, but if government actually wants to do it, you would have seen your elected officials working to create securities around their social programs and also to get the cities and the state on board to increase the minimum wage.
We've got two propositions and a few minutes left, so let's get these last two. Proposition C, proposed by initiative petition. Do you want to amend the Missouri law to remove state prohibitions on personal use and possession of medical cannabis, marijuana, with a written certification by a physician who treats a patient diagnosed with a qualifying medical condition, remove state prohibitions on growth, possession, and production and sale of medical marijuana by licensed and regulated facilities and the facility's licensed owners and employers, impose a 2% tax on the retail sale of medical marijuana, and use funds from this tax for veteran services, drug treatment, early child education, and public safety in cities with the medical marijuana facility, and state government estimates initial cost of anywhere between $2.6 million annually and $10 million, and the local revenues of at least $10 million, and supposed to have a cost of at least $152,000 annual revenue. So does this one legalize marijuana, or what's the deal with this one?
This one right here would give ultimate control back to the General Assembly and the governor. Right. So the difference between the first two is constitutional amendments. The first two constitutionally guarantees the right for people to have medicinal marijuana, and then that could be expanded underneath the law. This one right here is just a statutory change. So as soon as we get up there, we're going to play with it. And the quick example is the voter ID. Right to Work. As soon as Right to Work failed on the ballot, Republicans said they was going to file it again next year.
So quickly, Proposition D, the roads tax say for highways. What's your thought on that one?
This is political cowardice from our standpoint. The General Assembly, since Nixon has been in office, has been talking about increasing our fuel tax. We have not done it. We have not put it on the floor. We have not debated it. The streets is something that needs to be fixed. I'm against creating new taxes. Personally, I don't mean no.
So I want to thank Representative Ellington for coming in today. We never end Cowtown Conversations without a Community Minute. It's November the 6th, general election. Deadlines to register a vote are over, so exercise your vote. Your voice is your vote. So stay tuned for My Place with Larry J. And we'll be back next week talking more about the political conversation. Have a great day.